And now, an Envision Financial podcast with Luke Smith on Canberra's 2CC.
Well, I'm really very happy to have in the studio with me now Luke Smith from Envision Financial. Nice to catch up with you again. It's been a little while between drinks, as say.
Good to have you back.
Thank you very much. It's like we make sure that we spread that one around. I know that we've got a couple of other topics that we're going to be getting to as well, but I started off the program and I spoke yesterday about it, and obviously it's the headline news, and we've had some great calls today already.
Yep.
Negative gearing and what's going on with that, and the government, you know, flip-flopping around as per usual, demonising landlords and those taking advantage of it. What's your view, Luke?
I think this is sort of a multifaceted problem, and I think you've got to try and separate, you know, the whole landlord argument. I think landlords are perceived as these monsters that are taking advantage of a renting populace, which generally aren't the case.
Even the name isn't landlord. That needs to change.
Exactly right. And I think I think they've overshot here massively.
Yeah.
And, you know, one quick example. You sign a 12-month lease. Why do you need two more months to get out of the house?
Yeah.
It's a 12-month lease. It's not a 14-month lease.
Yeah, valid point.
And everything's about protecting the renter. And I liken this to unions in the 1900s. Did the worker have a fair go at it? No. So a union was created.
Yes.
And in the dark ages, they had some real value. With the legislation what it is today, does the worker need that much protection outside of standard legislation? And in 90% of industries, you'd argue no. And I think a lot of this landlord, renter, tenant legislation has overshot the other way. And I think this negative gearing is going to be another one where it'll be a perception of let's get the rich, let's get the invested. What they don't say is, Let's penalise the people that have had a crack.
That's right.
Now, having been 40-something years on this earth and this so-called Aussie mentality of the battler and having a crack and have a go, this just beats that out of people.
Yeah.
And I think negative gearing as a premise was passed from generation to generation with a bit of a false pretense. Now, there are benefits. Yes, there's some tax benefit and the like, and that's great. But does that fix a housing populace problem that we have? Or does an immigration policy that's shipping people in here to fill up the houses that are available, is that more of a problem? So the negative gearing side of things for me really is about saying, does it help the community? Well, are we talking about individual taxpayers? Are we talking about the availability of properties? The concept of negative gearing is always been questioned as to what's the benefit, because in the 90s, when the top marginal tax rate was 60,000, you had my parents' generation, big advocates of negative gearing, because you got immediate benefit from $60,000 onwards at a 50% deduction being the top marginal rate. Well, the top marginal rate's been at 180,000 for many, many years.
Yeah.
So it's actually directly diluted the net tax benefit of something like negative gearing, but that generational transfer of information from mum to daughter, from father to son, that older generation still have, oh, it's good, it's amazing, because they're referring back to what it was like in the 90s.
Yep.
They're now retired.
Mm.
So when you actually look at that and say, well, you were getting 50%, mum, because you were earning $70,000, which in the mid-90s was a great wage. I don't know what the stat is, but it's probably 1% of the population earn more than 180,000 to benefit from a 50% deduction from negative gearing. So for me, if you're going to be $10,000 negative to get $3,000 back, where's the upside of that to start with?
Yeah, that's right. And the other thing that I've pointed out in talking about it this week is that's the whole idea of being an investor, isn't it? If you're putting your money up into these properties to make them available, you're not doing it for love. You're doing it to have a return on your investment.
100%. And I think that there comes back to that mentality that we've always had in this country, supposedly, that I think a little tongue-in-cheek is being diluted, either from a legislative standpoint or just from a social standpoint, where the have and have not theory is really getting some momentum. And I think there's a huge disincentive if you start to take away these types of benefits. And another one that they're throwing up is, well, maybe we'll amend the capital gains tax discount.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, that's another massive one that, again, penalises people from having an opportunity. So if I'm an investor and I want to buy some land and build and rent it out to somebody to have a house, there's going to be a disincentive to be able to do that. And you can end up down a rabbit hole with these conversations on individual parts of the argument. That's a given. But I think holistically, the way the legislation has been created and the way that it's being policed at the moment, especially in the ACT, when you look at rates, land tax, and then the use of that money.
And levies and strata fees.
I have clients in. And look at the debacle in the strata world now in relation to the corruption articles that came out a couple of weeks ago.
That's right.
And that has been an unchecked, like, you want to talk about an unregulated industry that is cowboy laden. And I don't say that to offend anybody in the industry, because one of my best mates is an owner of a massive strata company and they do a wonderful job. But it's like anything in life, it's the minority that destroy it for the majority of people have the right intentions. And I think if we create too many disincentives to be able to invest and take a chance and try and build wealth through any form of gearing, it's going to slow down the broader growth of people's wealth. And I think it just starts to put a real dampener on having a crack. And, you know, as again, I've come up in an environment where that was always our motto, have a crack.
And
you
that's, know what I mean? That's what the Sydney Morning Herald said today as well, that it's not about wealthy Australians, it's not about the rich, it is about middle income, ordinary citizens who have then invested in property in order to many times prop up their superannuation as well. We're supposed to be relying on our own superannuation instead of relying on the government.
Mm.
If we're going to penalise that, as you say, what's the incentive to do it? We might as well, we'll just sit back and be on the pension and be done with it.
The other thing that they miss here, okay, and the broader consensus at a certain level of financial exposure, is that property has been the last port of call when you don't know what else to do.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that it's not smart investing, because it very much is. But if you sit down with most clients that come in and go, what's riskier? Shares or a house?
Yeah.
99.5% of the time,
bricks and mortar.
They say, I can see it, I can touch it.
Yes.
And I don't need to go to university to learn about the premise and the principles of that form of investing. So you're always going to have a huge amount of demand, and it very much plays a vital role, as you said, in the creation of wealth. And whether it's property from a residential perspective, a commercial perspective, an industrial perspective, it's something that people have a level of familiarity with and comfort with. Now, if you take that away by creating disincentives to do that, people will not, having been in my industry for 25 years, people will not go and educate themselves to an alternative as a general rule. You'll always have your outliers and people that have an interest in that area, just like you do in the property space. But if you take away that property avenue and you force people down the investment road of ETF shares and other things, I think you will see a significant reduction in the commitment of capital and the risks that are taken from potentially a generation of kids that come up.
Yeah, it's a really valid point.
These current kids coming up, they're pretty soft. They've been told by their school teachers they can be anything they want to be. We've got participation medals. We've bred risk out of kids through the school system and through workplace, and everybody's woke and everybody's got to be equal and you can't say no and nobody can be upset. So how does that move forward in a society where you now say, oh, take some risks, but you can only do it over here in a field you know nothing about, because over here it's been beaten out of you? And I have conversations with people regularly in my office selling the vast majority of their ACT property because the legislation is far out of the norm with land tax. It's a huge disincentive.
Yeah.
And I often laugh with people that are local clients, and they'll go, oh, I'm going to buy something in Queensland, or I'll buy something over the border, you know, buy over the border 5 minutes away.
That's right. That's why Googong is booming.
Exactly. For that very reason. And I don't think Andrew Barr actually sees that, or nobody's made him aware that the general populace are sick to the back teeth of paying rates, land tax, and all these other things.
And you even have a landlord tax over here. So again, you're sort of thinking, and the point that I was getting to there, Luke, is when you were saying that if there's not those incentives to purchase or keep those properties, then they do look for the alternatives, whether it's the share market or whatever, because they say, while I understand the rental market, the real estate market better, it's not worth my while, so I am going to take my money and I'm going to put it somewhere else.
100%. And I think that's where it's getting missed. And I think the CGT discount discussion, if you want to impact an area of investment, that CGT discount will have a massive, massive impact on the availability of properties, because people then won't sell.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to pay 25% and miss out on a 50% deduction. They'll just hold things.
Yeah.
So there won't be a new lease of property really. You won't have availability change. I think we've got a massive problem in the ACT in relation to, one, the collection of monies for very little benefit to the community, and two, everyone can argue that the use of that money, well, that's 15 shows. but yeah, I think they need to be very careful about how they do this. Yes. But I think they also need some backbone in relation to talking about it, clarity, and have a position. Because a couple of the sort of interviews I've heard have been, oh, yeah, maybe could, should, would, And again, come back to the consumer. You've got people with millions of dollars worth of assets tied up in something that if there's nobody to buy them.
That's right.
The price isn't going up.
That's right. And if they don't continue to invest in that market, you then dry up the supply available.
100%.
And as everyone keeps talking about, it is supply that is the issue. Now, look, we can go on and talk about this particular matter more if we like, Luke. Yeah, we're going to have a break. And if we want to come back, we can continue on this path, because it's a pretty interesting conversation. No, and we hope that you're enjoying it out there as well. I'm joined by Luke Smith from Envision Financial, and we've been having a very interesting chat about negative gearing, capital gains and things that are going on, and discussions from a federal government perspective about will they, won't they change that. Of course, Luke, it's being driven by the Greens, and the Greens claiming that they are the renters' party, but everything that they're trying to do is actually going to make things more difficult for renters.
Yeah, look, I think making statements like that, we're the renters party. I'm like, really?
Exactly.
Is there an investors party? Is there a common sense party? Is there I'd like to retire with some money party? Like, where do you draw a line in relation to, again, one group of people's sort of out there view of what is fair and reasonable? And I think this comes down to, again, that let's punish the people that have had a crack, or let's punish the wealthy because of the perception that people have two or three places that they're wealthy. And I can assure you, as somebody that sees people's financial position regularly, there have been a lot of people that have got away with making some really, really risky investments over the last decade when money was cheap.
Yep.
And now they've got to pay the piper. And it's getting very hard to borrow. Servicing capacity in the eyes of the bank is much, much harder than it was 12, 18 months ago. So even if people are refinancing, they can't get the money that they've already got in some situations, because you might have had a baby, you might have changed jobs, you may not have been self-employed for very long, and the bank goes, sorry, we can't lend to you. And that's their right and that's their criteria. But 7 or 8 years ago, you could go and buy 5 properties and that'd be
right.
Okay.
And then what about, you know, when I was a teenager and my parents in buying their house and working so hard to do that, when they were paying 18%? Yeah. In interest rates.
Exactly. So each generation has its challenges. But I think if you're going to do that, the other thing they need to keep in mind in the article that I read the other day, especially about the negative gearing, and there was one line in there, I think it was The Australian, that said, well, you know, it'll be grandfathered.
Oh, yes, that's right. I think that was the latest thing, yeah.
So you grandfather all of the negative gearing.
Mm.
That's not going to give anybody an incentive to change their behaviour if they know, well, I can't get another one, so I'll hold these for perpetuity.
Yeah.
That's not going to increase availability of a property either.
No.
So you'll create a disincentive to go forwards. You'll make it harder and harder for this younger generation. They're going to need all the help in the world, because if you look at the average wage and the cost of a house, household income to debt now has got to be running at 8 to 10 times.
Wow.
Which is bonkers.
Yeah.
In a relatively normal interest rate environment, and this is what a lot of people miss. You go back to 2006, interest rates were what? 8, 9? Say they were 9.
You could
get money in an ING bank account risk-free at 8. Say home loans were at 9, petrol was $2, and Kevin Rudd was throwing out money to people. resource industry was great, markets were doing 15% and things were amazing. Here we are at 6.5% and people are crying poor and everything's tough and oh my God, oh my God. Now, is it tough because of the economic environment? There's a very good argument for that. Or is it tough because of the expectations of the lifestyle you think you're afforded or allowed or should have through no fault of your own because you've come out of school and been told you can be whatever you want to be and you deserve this, that and the other? Well, I'd argue no. So at 6.5% we're crying, but at 9% in 2004, 2005, 2006, things were amazing and we thought nothing of it. And as you said rightly, your parents' generation, my parents' generation saw 17, 18, 19%.
Like you just can't even imagine it. It's how they even got through.
Yeah.
And that's right. You've got to take advantage of the good situations when you have that opportunity, but also to know from an economic and life perspective, things are going to change and you need to be prepared for that too.
And I think a lot of people have you know, they hope for negative or they wished for negative gearing while interest rates were at 2 and 3.
Yeah.
They've got it now and they actually don't like what it tastes like because now they're going, oh, I get 40 of rent, but the interest is 50.
Yep.
Oh, and I get 3 back. What did I wish for this again? You know, so whilst you can argue it's good or bad as a principle, to then start taking it away or limiting people's ability to do it, any investor is going to make an informed decision around whether something is right or wrong for them. So this for me is not about is it good or is it bad. That's a separate discussion around suitability for an individual. But to now come in and try and do things to help the renting community, like, please.
And it's the thing, isn't it? If we want to give particularly our younger generations a hand to get into the property market and have that opportunity as well, we have to make things easier. And that's not just making it easier for those who currently have property, but for those who want to get in there. If we continue to penalise and take away incentives and, you know, we're never going to assist in that way.
No. And look, here's a great example. Is the solar program, you know, great program, give people an incentive to be able to get solar on their house to reduce their costs.
Yep.
Then they go and reduce the threshold to 450 grand unimproved land value and nobody in the ACT can use it. So they've got a program that no one can use. How does that help people? Electricity prices are climbing. You know, I think they need to try and align the interest with the community because I think they're wildly out of touch, especially in the ACT with the costs that are involved. It'd be a very compelling argument to buy something in the ACT.
And I think that's why we are seeing so much movement over the border as well. Look, we're down to our last minute already, Luke. Been a fascinating conversation. You better tell us where listeners can get more information.
Yeah, look, office number 6260-4749. We've got envisionfinancial.com.au on the internet. We've got the strategy stacker, Luke Talks Money, on iTunes and Spotify. And these types of investment options and negative gearing and these other strategic considerations are all in Smart Money Strategy, your ultimate guide to financial planning, available in all good bookstores and Amazon.
And, you know, YouTube, TikTok, Smart Money Strategy, you're all over it.
This is a little bit for a little bit.
Social media guru. Well, look, it's been lovely having you in and having the chance for a chat again this afternoon. Luke Smith from Envision Financial. And I hope you've gained something out of that pretty informative chat about negative gearing. Luke, you'll be back here with Leon next week.
Yep.
And then I'll be back in the hot seat for Leon when he has a little bit of time off. So we'll be back on together and look forward to that.